Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, the 29th of December, 1999. We're in the fireside room this evening for the opening of the Peace is the Way retreat, presented by the Lutheran Peace Fellowship. The title of the retreat is From Violence to Wholeness, The Experience and Dynamics of Violence. Session number is FO99-19. Let's listen in.
All right, so I thought that we could start the evening with a song, and I'll teach you the words. Probably some of you know it. And it's a round, actually, and maybe for right now we'll just do it through a few times, not as a round, just so you can kind of get comfortable with the words if you don't know it. So, and the words are, and everyone neath their, and everyone neath their vine and fig tree shall live in peace and unafraid. So maybe just say that after me. And everyone neath their vine and fig tree shall live in peace and unafraid. And then the second part is, and into plowshares beat their swords, nations shall learn war no more. So, and into plowshares beat their swords, nations shall learn war no more. So maybe many of you know this. And the melody is, and everyone neath their vine and fig tree shall live in peace and unafraid. And everyone neath their vine and fig tree shall live in peace and unafraid. And everyone neath their vine and fig tree shall live in peace and unafraid. Second part. And into plowshares beat their swords, nations shall learn war no more. And into plowshares beat their swords, nations shall learn war no more. And everyone neath their vine and fig tree shall live in peace and unafraid. And everyone neath their vine and fig tree shall live in peace and unafraid. And into plowshares beat their swords, nations shall learn war no more. And into plowshares beat their swords, nations shall learn war no more. And everyone neath their vine and fig tree shall live in peace and unafraid. And everyone neath their vine and fig tree shall live in peace and unafraid. And into plowshares beat their swords, nations shall learn war no more. And into plowshares beat their swords, nations shall learn war no more. So then the way we'd sing it as a round, we could maybe split the group halfway. Want to try it? All right, so here we go. Sounds great.
And everyone neath their vine and fig tree, and everyone neath their vine and fig tree shall live in peace and unafraid. And everyone neath their vine and fig tree shall live in peace and unafraid. And into plowshares beat their swords, nations shall learn war no more. And into plowshares beat their swords, nations shall learn war no more. And everyone neath their vine and fig tree shall live in peace and on a fig tree. And everyone neath their vine and shall live in peace and unafraid. Everyone near the vine and fig tree shall live in peace and unafraid.
I want to welcome you tonight. I've served Holden Village as director for 5 years plus a little few more months, and all of those 5 years I have wanted to do something special on this weekend. And last winter Barbara Rossing came to the village and I was telling her about this, and she said, well, let's do something together with Lutheran Peace Fellowship. She was then serving as the chair of their board. I think she's off that role now. And we sat and talked at coffee break and basically put the whole thing together there in a half an hour in our own minds, how we thought it should work. But for me, this is truly a privilege to be here with you tonight. This is my 9th Christmas season at Holden, and it really is a privilege to be with you here now. It's important for us to be here as a people of faith on this particular New Year's. It'll be important for us to be together on every New Year's, but it's important for us to be here and say we can make a difference because of whose we are. And I am so privileged. And thank you for coming and being here with me and being in community with me. So welcome. Thank you to those of you who have taken the leadership here. My role kind of quit back then, and I kind of laid it out to other people, and they've taken it along. And thank you to those of you who have taken the leadership here and will guide us through the weekend. So peace to all of you.
Why don't we just begin with a centering prayer? Most of the other things we're going to be using this weekend, or many of them, are from this book called From Violence to Wholeness that is in the bookstore, and Elizabeth has copies tonight as well for those of you who would like. And she'll say a word about that maybe in a minute, how you want to handle with the names. But why don't we just begin by entering this time together with a prayer of centering. So however you want to seat yourself. Spirit of God, we long to mend the broken circle. We long to heal the fractures in the world around us and within our souls. To learn from one another the ways of living fully alive. To transform those parts of ourselves and our world that block our making contact with deepest reality. And with the deepest, richest, and most sacred dimensions of all other beings. Spirit of God, we long to see reality, to contact our deepest yearning for a world with justice and truth, to dream of a society where we will all sit down at the great banquet, where every person eats until they are full. Spirit of God, we long to discover anew the courage deep within us, to see and to listen, to discover our true selves, to take steps to stop the cycle of violence in our homes, in our workplaces, in our neighborhoods, in our country, and in our entire world. Spirit of God, be with us tonight and through this weekend. In Christ's name, amen. Amen.
I think I met or introduced myself to most of you, but for those of you who I haven't met, my name is Stacy, and I serve the village as a program coordinator here. And It's the fifth day of Christmas, and this morning I woke up as if I was a child on Christmas Day morning. I couldn't stay in bed. At five this morning, I was so excited for what was about to come that all of us were gathering here. And as Janet said, this is a gift and a privilege. And I realized long ago, many months ago, that I didn't want to enter into this millennium thinking about thoughts if I had fear, or thinking about peace and nonviolence by myself. And so I'm excited that we are all gathered here. And I hope that this feeling of excitement, I know there's other people who woke up early this morning because they were so excited too. And we are still in Christmas. Christmas Day didn't end, and Christmas isn't over because of that. It's still continuing on. So I hope that can be the spirit that we open this retreat with, is a spirit of Christmas, a spirit of hope. And I know that most of you got in the mail the Advent meditation booklet, and on the back was the vow of nonviolence. And if you don't have your copy with you, or you didn't get one, feel free to grab one. And this will be a guide for part of our retreat. And on Saturday, we will be looking at the vow of nonviolence in a service, and tomorrow as well. And it's printed on the back page here. So. So feel free to take that. Right now, I'd like to introduce the people that have been working so hard on this retreat and dreaming about what it could be. And now we're all here together to figure out what it's going to be. But you met Joe, who led us in song, and Joe Crookson's from Seattle, and he is here to help us bring our thoughts and feelings about peace into music and song together. But I don't know if you have anything you'd like to say.
Just throw it in here. Yeah, it's awesome. I'm just glad to share it with everyone. And coming from a big city, I work hard to have a community and to be at a place like this where community is here. It feels incredible to me. So I just really, thanks.
I'd also like to introduce to you Pastor Maya Baumgartner, who serves the village here.
And I'm a preacher, so of course I have something to say. I have two things. One is welcome, and welcome to this community that has been here. You are now part of our winter community. Please know that and feel embraced by that. We have been studying and considering the vow of nonviolence since November 11th this year. Every Thursday at the Hunger Mail, we've been looking at it and having forums. And so know that you enter a community that has been considering it. And so so I hope that will help the table conversations too. If you need any time for, I'm available too as your pastor too this weekend, and so if you would like to chat with me anytime, you can just put a note in my box, which is near registration, and just write your room number and name so I can find a way to get back to you and find a time to sit down and chat. So welcome.
I'd like to now introduce Barbara Rossett, who has been working long and hard on this retreat, and we've been writing letters and faxes back and forth, so it's good to be face-to-face, and she'll introduce everyone else.
Well, we're members of the Lutheran Peace Fellowship Board, really happy to be up here, especially, I should say, a great thanks to Holden. You've been supporting Lutheran Peace Fellowship all summer with the offering monies, and we're really happy to be able to be here as part of that connection, so thank you. This is Terry Schweitzer from Seattle, a member of the Lutheran Peace Fellowship Board, and we're all going to take turns leading. Although I guess since I'm a seminary professor and I'm mainly in Bible, my main role is going to be the Bible studies tomorrow and the next day, and then some preaching too. So, but the others are certified nonviolence trainers. This is Jay McDivitt, a student at Luther College, and Jerry Peterson, a pastor in California, who's the new chair of the board.
And we're going to describe more about the nature of the training in just a moment after this next activity, which involves everybody standing. So let's have everybody stand. And Milling. So what you're going to imagine is that you're far away from Holden, you're on a New York City street corner, it's 5 o'clock on Friday, and you just want to get home. But so does everybody else, and you're kind of bustling, trying to get through the crowd, so kind of create that bustling atmosphere for yourself by milling around, and you can go ahead and get started now. Find a person next to you and be silent with that person. And just be aware of their presence. You don't have to necessarily look at them in their eyes. Just do whatever is comfortable being aware of their presence. And recognize the person standing before you has likely experienced the harshness of life with its difficulties, its times of unfairness, and its moments of sorrow and loss. This person has likely experienced some forms of violence, perhaps emotional violence, perhaps verbal violence, perhaps physical violence. Be quietly aware of the life journey of the person standing before you, especially her or his likely experiences of violence. Now, acknowledge this person in some way. And then start the milling again.
Are we going to be less violent as we go along?
Okay, and one more time, stop and find a person near you. And again, as before, be quietly present of this person in whatever way feels comfortable. And recognize the person standing before you has been on a spiritual journey all through her or his entire life. Faced with adversity, with loss, or with her or his own woundedness, they have been on a journey towards wholeness and meaning. They have been on a journey toward the fullness of love. They have been experimenting with love, even in the most difficult of times. Let us quietly be aware of the length and breadth and depth of their journey toward becoming human. Now let us acknowledge this person in some way.
Hi.
And I would advise you then. To join with another pair and find a spot where you can sit as a foursome or in whatever group feels comfortable. And introduce yourself to each other.
Can you say again what we're supposed to do? I couldn't.
That's okay, thank you. After you've introduced yourselves, reflect and share on whatever level you feel comfortable why you want to learn about nonviolence.
Just got back to college semester.
Wonderful conversation, but once you wrap that up, I'd also like to honor our life experiences of violence and nonviolence that we've all had by having you each share, again, at whatever level you feel comfortable, an experience you've had and struggled with violence or nonviolence.
If as we're joining the circle, we could try and again keep that those chairs back as far as we're going to need that open space there a little bit later. So. Thank you very much for all of your conversation. It was obvious that the room was really, really buzzing with that. And I would really encourage all of you, we're not going to have time to share any of our stories. We have such a big group and so much active conversation that I would really encourage you to continue talking about these issues and anything that we address throughout the rest of the weekend over coffee breaks or any time you have a chance to just to get together and to keep discussing the kinds of things that come up, your own personal experiences of violence and nonviolence and so forth. What I'm going to do is spend just a couple of minutes kind of giving you a preview of what those of you who choose to continue with this program for the rest of the weekend, and I really would encourage everyone to keep coming as much as you can, what you can expect from us and what you can expect from the program for the next few days. Like we said, this is we're working from this workbook, From Violence to Wholeness. It's a 10-week program, which is 20 hours of material, and we have 7.5 hours together. So we're really going to have to be moving quickly. And to do that, we just need to work together as much as we can to keep talking to a minimum, you know, except for when we're supposed to be, and just to really focus on why we're here and what we're doing. The goal of this program, again, is this journey from violence to wholeness. And Jerry's going to be talking about that journey in just a few minutes as we start to talk about what violence and nonviolence are. We realize that there's a huge spectrum of people in this room as far as what your experience with the whole method of thinking of active nonviolence is. There are people here who may have been involved in various different nonviolent social movements throughout American history or the history of any other country for that matter. And there may be some of you here who have very little exposure to that. And so what this program is it's something that focuses on your own individual journey as well as the journey of the community. And so to really take some time for those of you who have had a lot of exposure to this to kind of delve deeper into that spiritual journey that you're on. And for those of you who haven't had much exposure to this, this should be a real good introductory kind of exposure to that, and then to start you on a journey that you can continue taking. We're going to be meeting together 6 times, as the schedule shows. And what we can expect from this is, again, this is a 10-week, 10-session program that we're trying to condense as much as we can. And so there are going to be some things that are going to seem rushed, but hopefully we'll be able to cover. Today, we're talking about violence and nonviolence and defining those and talking about the experience of that. Tomorrow, we'll have 2 sessions in the morning. Jerry's going to lead us through talking about the nonviolence of Jesus and the way in which he started to kind of formulate a means of overcoming oppression and of you know, working against this domination system that we're talking about. Tomorrow evening, I'll be talking about gender and violence and ecology and violence, the connection between those two. Then the next day, whatever day of the week that happens to be, I kind of lose track of time up here. Terry's going to be talking about Martin Luther King and Gandhi and their social movements. In the evening, then, we're going to be talking about other nonviolent movements, the violence of economics and things like that, and talking about some brainstorms of different nonviolent movements that we have been or can be involved in, and then continue with that real brainstorming and looking ahead the next day. What this grows out of, the reason that this particular weekend was chosen for this, is that all of the living Nobel Peace Prize laureates, for those of you who may not know this, all of the living Nobel Peace Prize laureates, including some who've died in the past couple years, together decided to put forth an appeal to the United Nations and all of the member nations, called the For the Children of the Whole World, an appeal for a decade of education and practice of nonviolence. And so this is ringing in that new year, the first year being a real focus on the education aspect of it, and then continuing for the rest of the 10 years to really experiment and practice nonviolence. And so this is what Lutheran Peace Fellowship has really focused on for the last couple of years, is getting people involved in that. So this is why this particular weekend was chosen for that. And so hopefully you'll find that we'll be talking more about that Nobel appeal, especially later in the weekend when we start getting into our own kind of planning and looking ahead and brainstorming about how we can be involved in these kind of types of movements. So without any further jabbering by me, I'd like to introduce Jerry, who will be talking about some definitions for you.
Yes. By the way, it's not just the United Nations that call for this decade of creating a culture of nonviolence, especially for children, but the churches have also done that. At least the ELCA has done that at its National Assembly, and it said that every congregation should be teaching, practicing, and modeling nonviolence. So we've taken this as a mandate that we're to go out and help the church be what it's supposed to be. Lutheran Peace Fellowship has always been on the fringe of the church, you know, talking about conscious objection and militarism and war and all these things, and not too many people listen. For the first time since over 50 years, 1941 it began, for the first time, the church has said to us, come right into the center of the life of the church and help us understand what violence and nonviolence is, and help us teach our people. So we've taken that as a mandate, and I'm not sure they were that serious as to what we were supposed to do, but that's what we're trying to do. We invite you to do it. A couple of points. If you get the manual, and I hope you do get it, on page 12, page 16 and 17, there's some starting points to start your thinking. And I just want to mention a couple of them. First point is, we don't have to be perfectly nonviolent before we can take action towards nonviolence. Nonviolence is something you grow into. Let me affirm that. I'm the old man of this outfit, and I began my peacemaking efforts in 1943 when I joined the Marine Corps, and I was going to bring peace to this world. And after 2 years of seeing what happened in that, being out there in the Pacific when they dropped the atomic bomb, I began to realize there is no way to peace. Peace is the way. That's what A.J. Mustey has said, and that's kind of a theme we have. There's no way to peace, practicing and living peace. But I had to grow into this. To me, first it was to be part of a military machine. And then I came out of that and committed to, we got to stop wars as a solution to solving conflicts. And then it was race and all the racial issues. And then it was Cesar Chavez and working for justice and peace and using his nonviolent methods. And then it was feminism and, the whole story. And it's only of recent years that I've really taken seriously that nonviolence is really what Jesus was talking about. And I had to overcome all kinds of false understandings, and I've had to overcome the natural responses within my own life to use violence in overcoming violence. I did a pretty good job in my three kids, but my own kids are teaching me how they don't use some of the parenting violent skills that I used. And I'm still learning, and I've been in this a long time. if you don't, if you still know that you're not really, really into this nonviolence bit, don't let that bother you. Don't let it stop you from trying to get there. But it's something you grow into. Gandhi said that nonviolence is a continuing set of experiences, experiencing truth until we grow into truth. The second point, active nonviolence is a spiritual journey. I thought that nonviolence was a technique that you used. It was a tool you used to, you know, solve some conflict problems. It is that, and hopefully we'll deal with a few of those, but it's so much more than a technique. It's a way of life. It's a commitment to understanding yourself in this universe, you know, in a nonviolent creator, in a world that only functions when violence is rejected and we actively pursue peace. It's doing away with this terrible concept of passivity. Nonviolence is not passive. It's active nonviolence. And nonviolence is not for cowards. Nonviolence is for courageous people. In fact, Gandhi and King and other people that have been into this say that if you think you're going to get into nonviolence as a cheap way of dealing with conflict, forget it. Gandhi said he would rather have you go join the military. He would rather have you take up violence rather than to go into nonviolence cowardly or passively. Walter Wink says that the road to nonviolence always has to go from non-activity or passivity or neutrality, considering violence, and then resolving oneself in a commitment to active nonviolence. There's a lot of things we could say about violence and nonviolence. I think I'm going to let it go at that.
Great. What I'm going to do now is we're going to use that space. And unfortunately, well, it's not unfortunate at all, actually. It's wonderful that we have this many people. But what it means is that we can't all take part in the activity actually actively. But many of you can continue to watch and to contribute to the discussion. So if I could have maybe 10 volunteers, it'd be great. Active nonviolent volunteer. All right. Thank you, Joel. Can I have just 10 people very slowly make their way over this corner? People have to be sitting in this corner, and you guys are just kind of drafted. So, excuse my language.
Hurry up, get up here, folks.
All right. What we're going to do is we're going to work on. We're going to work on coming up with some definitions for violence and nonviolence by actually seeing how we view responses to certain circumstances. So what I need you to do is lie in a straight diagonal line just from me over to Joe, if I could. Okay, and we might need to add some more if these people all happen to think alike. but for right now, this will do it. So what I'm going to do is this is an activity called a violence and nonviolence barometer. And we're going to be able to look at how these wonderful volunteers, aren't they nice? Let's give them a round. We're going to view how these particular volunteers see certain circumstances and certain reactions to those circumstances, whether they view them as violent or nonviolent. And by the end of this, hopefully we will see a couple different things. Number one is that violence has a very broad scope. Not only does it have a broad scope of the way in which it's enacted, be it violent behavior, physical behavior, emotional, mental abuse, things like that, but it also has a broad scope as far as who is affected by it and what kinds of systems are involved in it. Violence is a system. It's a system of domination. And so because of that, there are economic issues, there are racial issues, there are environmental issues, there are sexual issues. There are various different issues that are involved in it, but it's all part of the same cycle. So hopefully that will become more and more clear to those of us who haven't maybe had that much experience with it by the end of this exercise. So what I'm going to need you to do is, the Advent wreath is nonviolent, okay? So this part of the room is nonviolence. And then this corner over here is where all the violent folks dwell. So, yeah, there you are. So that's the director. But what I need you to do is, after I read a particular situation, I need you to consider whether or not the person acting in the situation, whether their action was nonviolent or violent. And move to the extreme to which you think that was nonviolent or violent, move to that part of the room. So if you see it as an extremely nonviolent action, you can stand in the middle of the Advent wreath if they'll allow you to. If you see it as an extremely violent action, you would stand over on top of the director if she would allow you to. And then you find another place somewhere in between if you. Is that pretty clear? I'm sure most of us.
And there's no one right answer.
And there is no one right answer. In fact, there are no wrong answers.
I don't want you to do any violence to my books.
Okay. All right. So, our first situation. Glorious phrase, "This insults women" on a sexist billboard. Is Glorious' action violent or not violent? Gloria spray paints the words, "This insults women" on a sexist billboard. Is her action violent or not violent? And then, so, in this movie. Okay. And what we'll do is we'll have probably the two most extreme individuals in the line comment first, and then accept comments from those of you who aren't quite into the courageous movement quite yet and haven't jumped up to volunteer, which is absolutely wonderful. Okay, go ahead. And can we get your name first?
My name is Annalisa.
Okay, Annalisa. Why are you appear to think that Gloria's action is very nonviolent? What brought you to that?
I think that she made a statement that was, she made a statement against something that was very insulting to women without hurting anyone but a commercial kind of exploitation of that. And I think that there are a lot of other actions that could have been much more violent than that. But she's made a statement and she's spoken up for her wave, and that's
great.
It was nice lettering.
It was
elegantly
written. Okay. And your name?
I'm Tim.
Okay.
And I thought about it some more and
I moved this. Has anybody in the room, has anybody viewed this as a violent, or even mildly violent?
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah, that's mildly violent to the owner of the billboard, to the folks who leased it. You damaged someone's property.
Okay.
The person has to clean it up.
The person has to clean it up.
The average laborer who puts him up and now has got to go up either, spend time carrying it down or cleaning it up.
Some may or may not have been involved at all. Alex, do you want to respond to that?
Well, just what damage or violence has been done for women worldwide with this statement? And I don't want to become the barometer person here who differentiates between different shades of violence. But I do need to say that there are things that impact large groups of people, and by not standing up for that in different ways, this is damaging.
I think it's a very important question to ask, is to what extent is the harm done to women by a worldwide system of sexism? To what extent can that be addressed fully nonviolently? Are there actions which can help to take that apart that might be permissible?
I'm curious if she's saying that the act is less violent. You seem to be saying the act of spraying the paint is less violent because of the messages on the board.
Well, we don't know what the message is on the board, but if someone writes, "This insults women," I'm just believing that Gloria Steinem, or whoever it was, said that this insults women, and it was probably true that there was some message there that was portrayed to an entire society of people in a billboard-type fashion that had to be fairly insulting and degrading to half of the world's population. And is that letting that be perpetuated? Is that okay?
I still have to be a little harder on it. Are you really saying that the degree of violence depends on the message that was there?
I don't want to be the one to have to split hairs here. I'm just saying, to me, to have this billboard spread, there's damage being done to women as a part of society, and not to have that noted in some way is a perpetuation of violence, even though her action might have been part violent to the people who leased the billboard or whoever. That's my point.
Okay. What I'm going to do is, after each one of these, I'm going to read one of the points of the definitions. So then as we continue to work through this, we'll start to, from building up more of an understanding of the different definitions of violence and nonviolence, perhaps we can reach a point where by the end we'll be able to use those definitions in discussion. The first point of what violence is, right here. All right. Violence is emotional, verbal, or physical behavior which dominates, diminishes, or destroys ourselves or others. The first point of active nonviolence is that active nonviolence is creative, powerful, and an effective process for addressing and resolving conflict. So, and thankfully Barbara's going
to
be writing
some of those
up. She has them up in front of her, so she'll be able to continue. So, think about that as we continue on with other issues.
Can you read one more time?
Yes. Violence is emotional, verbal, or physical behavior which dominates, diminishes, or destroys ourselves or others. Active nonviolence is a creative, powerful, and effective process for addressing and resolving conflict. So, to what extent was Gloria's action either dominating or diminishing, or creative, or so forth? Okay, so the next issue. A person does nothing as a man on a nearby street repeatedly slaps a woman who appears to be his wife or girlfriend. Is the bystander's action violent or not violent? So this is not the man who is involved in the violence, but this is the person who does nothing as that event takes place. Is that violent or not violent?
Your name?
Mark, again.
Okay, Mark.
Yeah, I just feel like doing nothing can, in many cases, be the supreme act of violence. But, again, doing nothing doesn't necessarily equate to being passive, and it's certainly not active and non-violence.
Okay. Tim, you're the closest to the nonviolent side as anyone, but.
Well, I understand Mark's point that doing nothing is perpetuating what's going on. But it's not, it doesn't seem clear that it's definitely. I'm in the middle of what it's not. Yeah.
Okay, so there's some definite ambiguity. Are there comments?
A question for me, which makes me wonder if it would gravitate towards a nonviolent side, is whether or not intervening there is the best choice. If you're intervening in a conflict of that description, are you possibly attempting more conflicts by entering into that, or are you really going to solve anything?
Okay. Intervention's an excellent kind of buzzword for foreign policy as well. And one of the points of nonviolence is that all cycles of oppression, all cycles of violence are interlocking. Thus, this altercation between a man and someone who appears to be his wife or girlfriend is, in essence, the same, or a manifestation of the same cycle as perhaps to one country exacting domination over another. And to what extent is us standing by and allowing that to happen, violent or not violent,
And then, of course, looking at nonviolence, what are the creative ways in which we can intervene? What are some other comments? Joe?
I was thinking of the mindset behind the inactivity. And when we broke down into small groups, I was just sharing a story about a time when I was assaulted on a street in Philadelphia. And there were three men who were doing it to me. And when I came to on the street, on the sidewalk, I looked up and there was a guy walking sort of away from us, and I kind of reached up to him, and he went like this. He gave me this clear signal, like, I don't want to be involved. Mm-hmm. And that to me felt like that's almost a more vivid image in my mind than the image of the other men in some ways. And so to me, that was extremely nonviolent. So I kind of wanted to go back in the corner there, but I couldn't get through the chairs. It seemed very nonviolent to me, and very it seemed very violent to me for him to do that. And had the situation been different, and he was on the other side, you know, who knows what the situation was, but maybe his inactivity would have been nonviolent, like Gustav said, considering, is it the best, you know, objective choice at that moment? So anyhow, that to me, it really pushes the button, because that seemed very violent. That look of, nope.
I think everybody, one of the images that comes to my mind, and perhaps some of yours, is a very profound biblical image of walking by as opposed to stopping down. What is Jesus' objection?
I thought there was something. I can see that at the same time, anytime you're confronted with that situation of seeing violence happen, you need to take a careful gauge of your own comfort level. And, I mean, if you're, I don't know if Rebecca's down there, she can go down there somewhere, but, I mean, if you're a small person and you see three guys pummeling this guy, at some point you have to ask yourself, is my getting in the way of this going to inflict violence on myself?
That might not be the only option, though.
Yeah, there might be other ways, but I mean, you have to see what's available.
At least you could go to a phone and call the police.
Maybe a subtle difference. This means I don't give a damn.
Yeah, exactly.
And you, what's happening to you is not part of my problem. And a quick assessment, I don't want to get involved for physical reasons, but I can stand here and yell, or I can do something that's away, but still, you know, so maybe there's that more gray area.
I appreciate that comment, that I think if there's a key statement in nonviolence, it is that there is another way, and that the options are not limited as to how to overcome these cycles. The second point on both of these definitions, violence crosses boundaries without permission, disrupts authentic relationships, and separates us from other beings. I think that separation is something that's key to this issue. Active nonviolence, on the other hand, seeks to break the spiral of violence and to create options for a more human alternative. And those will be written up there shortly. All right, the next issue, and unfortunately, all of these could be talked about for hours, but again, we're really kind of trying to move through. Okay, here we get into some economic and labor issues. A company with a sizable profit margin decides to relocate to Mexico in order to increase its profits even further. Anybody who lives in Seattle is probably well aware of what this issue is involved in. This will cost a small town 200 jobs. Is this company's action violent or not violent? So the company is a large company with a sizable profit margin, is moving to Mexico in order to increase its profits. Is this violent or not violent? What do they make? That is an important issue. Unfortunately, it's not a part of the discussion. There's another one in here which talks about things that are made.
Widgets,
yes. Nonsensical. Well, Tim, it looks like you're moderation here. Why don't we go here? We haven't. We get your name,
Jonathan. Okay, Jonathan. I'm maybe a third of the way over.
Okay.
And a little moderate. Because I think the Mexicans who might get a job if they make something worthwhile. Mm-hmm. But the sizable profit margin you repeated twice, so if they could share some of that in structural lines.
Obviously, none of you are shareholders.
That's a good point.
We might be.
You might be concerned with shareholders or socially conscious.
Bottom line is there.
Yeah, but I think one of the points was that the bottom line was good. This was going to just increase. And so you kind of wonder, often in a corporation where profits are increased a lot, what that means is that the top people get a lot more and nobody else gets a lot.
Tim, what more information would you want?
Well, if you look like on the individual level of the different employees, like for the Mexican worker who gets a job, what does that do for that person? And then the person that lost the job, is that in all cases necessarily a violent act? You know, it's not, I don't have enough information, but like if you look at it as a whole picture, like this it looks kind of bad. I'm kind of leaning this way, but I'd have to hear people's stories, I think, like what the outcome is. And I mean, you can look at trends, and I understand that that sort of thing probably is going to be exploitive, but I don't know for sure.
Unfortunately, we got to keep moving along.
Well, who is violent being done against to those people who walk that way? Who do you believe violence is being done against?
So, she seems to profound response to that.
Well, I would question how the workers are being treated in the other country, and if it's young kids who've been taken out of school, and if it's just in a free trade zone or something where they're just producing this, you know, where they work the young girl from about 14 to maybe 20 or 16, you know, when she has really good skills and then it goes crazy to develop, you know, depending on what they're making. But I mean, just knowing and seeing that situation where people can't miss a day of work because for their family or for anybody being sick and ill, because there's 100 other people lined up, to take that job, and it's not a great paying job anyway. So, that's what I would think would be most problematic. Is if it was what I've seen for in the future.
It would seem like I would tend to agree with. With Tim, unless you assume that the moving to the poorer nation is an exploitative type of move, and the decision was made based on the who cares about the people, mm-hmm. we can make more money. If that's the decision, then I can see some violence in it. But I kind of agree with Tim. I didn't necessarily hear that.
We'll take one more.
Well, it seems to me that there wouldn't be any other reason for a company to move to a foreign company except that they get a better deal on the labor, and what that means is that they give the people just barely enough. And maybe that barely enough means that they still don't have indoor plumbing or health care, and they're still kept in a violent system and not bettering themselves, but stuck and in slavery, as people in factories can be here. Mm-hmm. But it costs that company less. In fact, they make more money. So that's way abuse.
It takes a lot more than one company to create a system in which this is a problem.
Yeah.
And it's not just they're not the only actors in it. So that's an excellent point.
I just wanted to throw out the idea that maybe the violence, not always in such a physical realm, but in a spiritual realm, maybe that idea of that they're moving for the money, for profits, for, and it maybe it's much less physical. Like maybe once someone asked, who is the violence being done to, and maybe it's just sort of in a spiritual realm, there is, I don't know, just throw that out there. Yeah.
The next point, violence is often motivated by fear, unrestrained anger or greed to increase domination or power over others. It can also be motivated by a desire for justice in the face of injustice, a longing to put things right, to overcome an imbalance of power, to end victimization or oppression. I mean, that's something coming into play with the spray painting of the billboard. Often those who perpetrate violence do so with the conviction that they are overcoming a prior violence or injustice. In this program, we will explore whether or not there are alternative ways to achieve true justice. And active nonviolence is an act of faith in the nonviolent God. It is a powerful means of experiencing that God. One more issue, unfortunately.
How can you say that a God that sacrifices his only son is a
nonviolent
God?
That's an absolutely wonderful question. Actually, this summer, Lutheran Peace Fellowship had a gathering with a couple other peace and justice organizations with concern in LHRA, where we met. Walter Wink provided the keynote address. And I raised that very question with him, that the atonement myth, which is most prevalent in Christianity, is the one of the sacrificial lamb. And I guess I'm not a theologian. I've done a lot of reading in that because it's a question that I struggle with a lot. And I understand where you're coming. And I would love to talk to you, anybody else would love, just because I like to explore that particular issue, and that's what I'm writing my senior paper on. But just for kind of a cursory address, is that there are many more atonement myths than just the sacrificial lamb. That's not the only atonement myth, or the only atonement theory of how we are saved or how we are made one with God. So the story of a God sacrificing her only son is not necessarily the only way to go about approaching salvation from a Christian standpoint, even. But within Christianity, there is room. Within the Gospels, there is a lot of room for variance there. But that's an excellent question that is raised many, many times when people talk about whether or not God is nonviolent. Another one that's raised very commonly is a lot of the violence throughout the Hebrew Bible that's apparently sanctioned by the God of the Israelites. So, excellent, excellent question. And what's your name? I would love to chat with you there if you get a chance.
Put her in your footnote.
All right. Here's one for all you parents or potential parents or anybody who was a kid at any time. Which might be all of us. Grace spanks a child who is misbehaving. Is this action violent or not violent? Jonathan, I know you might have some experience with this one. Kids that might be hating.
In a perfect world, it would be violent, but in the world we live in, it's not necessary. It's the only language that speaks.
Okay. I don't know, I'm saying, like, if there's a child in a hot stove, they need to get their attention, you might resort to a little bit of violence, such as that, to prevent a greater violence from getting burned, to get their attention. So, and I'd say that not all. Violence isn't always an immoral action.
Okay. Those are two very packed statements that I would love to be able to unpack with this group. We have a lot of folks and not a lot of time. Quick comment from you. You've moved quite extremely over there, and you can sat down.
Well, I mean, I'm not a parent, so there's a lot of people who could throw that right back in my face right now, but I've done a lot of babysitting. I think that teaching violence is, that's what you're doing, essentially teaching violence. I grew up in a home that was I was taught nonviolence and different ways to deal with things, and when I misbehaved, there was time out, and there was different ways of dealing with that, and a lot of times I think that violence of spanking a child comes out of anger, and that is something you can think about. I mean, that you don't think about at the time. You're angry, and so you act out in this way. And kids, just that difference, aside from the physical hurt that comes with that, kids are very keen on picking up the emotions behind that anger. And when that teaches, that's a model. Kids see that, and that is something that they can portray later in their life, and I think the world doesn't need that.
Okay. Other comments?
Well, as a teacher, what I've noticed in the schools
is another side of things too, where there's great harm done to children who are not disciplined. And I guess it doesn't speak just to spanking, that if I were to look at a child who was not disciplined at all, and a child who was spanked a little, and determine which one had better emotional health, I'd probably say the one that was spanked for a little bit. Because neglect can be a worse form of violence.
That's the next thing. Spanking, discipline, right. And discipline is teaching. Discipline is teaching a way to behave. Spanking doesn't teach anything positive.
Yeah. I guess in a wide, wide world of different degrees of caring skills, when I look at those two things, that's just something I've noted. I'm not saying spanking is the best way of discipline, but sometimes it's all certain parents sometimes know how to do it at times. But neglect is the worst. I guess that's the point, is neglect and no discipline at all is worse for the child. And that's what I'm seeing now. I'm seeing the harm it does.
I appreciate that point, that discipline is teaching. I think discipline and disciple have kind of similar rings to them. As far as modeling and so forth. And that's where I really appreciate both that comment and also yours, that and it isn't the perfect world. You're absolutely right.
That's true.
Absolutely. And there's a difference, perhaps, I don't know necessarily, but I guess there may be a difference between some light spanking once in a while and, you know, perpetual domestic abuse, obviously. And there is a difference. To what extent it is a difference is, I think, is something to discuss.
In this one and the first one, there seems to be some redefining by justification. It's not violence because it's necessary. And to me, it'd still be violent, whether it was necessary or not.
Yeah.
In the first one, the billboard had a violent message, therefore, doing another message is not violent because that is violent, therefore I'm not. It seems if you can call a billboard violent, writing on it can be called violent. If the child's going to get hurt and you think it's okay to do it, it's still violent. But it seems like we're afraid to say it's violent. Violence is bad, nonviolence is good. So if we have to do violence, we have to rename it. And that seems what the militaristic society does too. Just renames the peacekeeper, but we're doing it here in the room.
Or the just war theory, another way that we rename that. I think that's an excellent point. To what extent is violence ever something that is necessary, even though it may never be right? And there's a lot of room for discussion and variance in this room, I'm sure. And especially outside of this room. Thank you very much for your help. Unfortunately, there are other issues. Yeah. Unfortunately, there are a lot more issues to discuss and to bring up. I'm going to just real quickly go through the rest of the points of the definitions, and then we'll have to move to closing. We've already gone over time, and I apologize for that. This was probably the longest session because we're really trying to squeeze in two of the most powerful and probably difficult and introductory sessions into one session tonight. So, the fourth point of violence. Violence often provokes new violence. This spiral of retaliatory violence is often propelled by social or personal scripts that are enacted in situations of conflict. An old adage that is used often when talking about revolution, and I talked about this briefly in our small group earlier, is that violence which is used to overthrow a ruler changes the rulers, but it doesn't change the rules. And that's the kind of what that point is addressing, is that violence provokes new violence and creates a spiral and doesn't ever change the way in which conflict is resolved. It just changes who happens to be on top. Point four of active nonviolence. Active nonviolence holds that human beings are meant to love and be loved. The next one is that for active nonviolence, reality is one. The nonviolent practitioner therefore yearns to transform all that separates human beings from themselves, from one another, and from the earth. active nonviolence seeks the truth, the opponent's truth as well as one's own. Active nonviolence acknowledges the woundedness, the violence, and the sacredness of ourselves and others. Active nonviolence is a process of repentance and transformation. Active nonviolence is a spiritual journey from fear, despair, and greed to compassion, balance, and wholeness. So some kind of closing comments on what active nonviolence and violence really are. In essence, there's a kind of a brief way to cover it, and that is that violence is anything which denies or defies the humanity of the other, that turns someone else, another being, be they human or not human or creation, turns it into an object which can be dominated. Whereas active nonviolence seeks as many creative possibilities and alternatives to turn what has been defined as an object into a subject, into something which has its humanity or its inherent dignity, if you're talking about creation and so forth. So that's a brief overview, is that to seek to make subjects out of everything, to realize that every being, every part of creation, including humans, has its own inherent worth, and anything that diminishes that is violent. And then, of course, there are lots of other issues raised with that. Jerry's going to give us kind of a preparation for the next session and kind of tie us up here. Thank you for all your attention. You've been great.
Thanks, Jay. For people who want to get this manual, how do they get a hold of it?
I have them in the bookstore. I have 15 copies with the supplement. If you'd like to pick it up tonight so you can look through it, you can just give me your name and then come in tomorrow and pay at the bookstore. The cost for the manual and the folder is $19. With the Washington state tax, it's $20.52.
And I might just add that we have some cheaper copies that are a little bit beat up, but it's for people who are maybe on a low income budget. We have some for $10, and they just look a little bit less nice, but we have all the same information.
We'll also have a copy in the dining hall and in the resource center, and one left in here that you can look at. So, and those will be written on the cover. So.
Hopefully, when you go home from this, you'll want to use some of this and perhaps do something in your own community or congregation. And I don't know of anything that is better than this manual. It was put out by a Catholic group, Pachi Beni, but 100% of it is Lutheran as well. Because we knew some people like to see Lutheran associated with things. We put a supplement, and that's what's in the blue and is part of this. Actually, we did a critique, and we felt there's some good things that they could have put in that they didn't. And in fact, they're probably going to revise this within the next year, and they will include most of our revisions in it.
And so there will be a reformed manual?
And can I make a comment also that though this is certainly grounded in a Christian community, the Franciscan community, and then a supplement, of course, grounded in Lutheran, that active nonviolence is something that can be and is practiced by people of all faiths and no faiths, and if you fit into any other category other than those two, to not feel as though this is an exclusive program.
Well, it's surely not. However, I think we would say that there is a spirituality, a basis of nonviolence that sometimes is missed by others. Terry attended a session in Seattle of the before the World Trade Organization session, and there were people talking about nonviolence, but it's okay to break windows and all that kind of stuff because it's not about human beings. And somehow, I think they've missed something of what nonviolence is all about. If you have the book, or if you look up one of these resources that are available around, on page 54, before tomorrow morning session, The Faithful Nonviolence of Jesus, it's It's a couple of pages, and I suggest if you can have a chance to read it, it'll help you coming into that session. Wes Howard Brook, when he taught here this summer, asked the question, where is heaven? And some of you said, right here at Holden. As I listened to these responses, I thought, yeah, this isn't like life down the hill. If you had done that exercise in most of the congregations that I know about, you would have had a great more diversity. People defending, views that were very, almost not heard here. The truth is, though, whether you acknowledge it or not, you've been part of a course, Violence 101. You didn't sign up for it, but if you grew up in America, maybe any other place, you have been subjected to media, you've been subjected even to theology that reflects that violence is the way to solve problems. And most of us have gotten good grades. We got A's in the course. And we have to work at trying to overcome this indoctrination we've had towards violence as a strong, positive way to deal with conflict. In closing, I'd like to just read this from The Faithful Nonviolence of Jesus by Nancy Schruck. The starting place for Jesus' use of nonviolence is his vision and commitment to the inclusive love of God that welcomes all to the one table and creates a worldview that critiques any kind of exclusion as a form of violence. One of the radical nonviolent actions, of Jesus, therefore, is to eat with sinners and tax collectors and all those others which the society of that time excluded. Sharing a common table is nonviolent resistance to the violence of division. In Jesus' vision, we are all part of one body held in God's all-embracing love. This embrace makes each one of us a sister and brother, and thus makes nonviolence possible. See you tomorrow.